Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy. Hybrid Jazz is a vision of all that is jazz, both traditional and contemporary, domestic and global. Here's your host, Trish Hennessy.
Well, thank you so much, Dave Solomon. Always nice to hear my good friend's voice from Philadelphia, where he, by the way, I have to give a plug for Dave. He does traffic on a lot of affiliates. So if that voice sounds familiar to you, you know why. He is the best in the business, and we've been friends since, what, 1976? Amazing. I usually play the introductory music at this time, but you know what? Not when we have a guest, and we have a guest today on Hybrid Jazz. I am so excited about this man. He doesn't even know. Yesterday, we had been in communication, and this gentleman had sent me a note that said, "I'm so happy that you'd like me to be on your show." And I just laughed. I didn't even answer him back because this gentleman is one of the hopes that the genre of jazz has. He has been able to turn people's heads around in a way that I really can't articulate. Suffice it to say that footage I've seen, and there's been a couple of pieces that I've seen, where this artist, this consummate artist, has been in a live scenario. Usually you hear chatter when someone is playing. Everybody shuts up when he starts to play the piano. This is composer, pianist extraordinaire, Roman Collin with me today. Roman, pleasure to have you.
Hi, Trish. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show. I'm really excited.
I am too, and in more ways than one. First of all, there are many who are going to fall in love with your accent. Where are you originally from?
I was born and raised in France, actually, in the south of France, in a small town called Antibes, which is also where it's home to a jazz festival that many of us know. You've had Live in Antibes with Mingus and Miles and Ella. So it's a small festival, but that has a lot of big names, and that's where I grew up, you know.
I just wanted you to say Antibes. Because there's a certain way that you are going to say it. If I say it, it's just going to sound foolish. But you know what? That's part of the reason for the excitement, Roman, because when there is a perspective on what you do instrumentally and you're not from the States, it's completely different. And as a matter of fact, we talked on the phone yesterday. A critic had mentioned this. Because of where you originate, because of the feelings and the vibe and the music you hear in your head from where you come in the south of France, and then coming over here, there's going to be cultures that collide, and your music is going to be different. And it is. Tim Green turned me on to The Calling, and I've been immersed in that. How do you view what you do as far as your music is concerned?
Well, I think what you just said is very true and significant in terms of how I go on about creating music. I grew up in Europe, I grew up in France, and I started learning classical music when I was a kid. I started piano when I was 6 years old. And I was only working on classical music then. So it's very much part of my culture, and I still practice and I still perform classical music. It's important to me not only in terms of understanding and knowing my instrument, because there's so much piano music written, but it's also for me a real foundation that's essential in terms of harmonic language, melodic language, compositional tools that are so fundamental, so important, you know, in terms of writing a theme, developing a theme, and basically composing a piece that holds together really well in terms of proportions. So that's how it started, and it still has a very profound impact and influence on how I understand music. And as I was a teenager, I started becoming more interested in improvisation, improvised music, and jazz in its many various forms. So I decided to move to the States, and I got the opportunity to study in great schools and great programs and lots of incredible mentors who sort of taught me how this purely American art form was created and how it was played. And so I really immersed myself in that world, and I think it's the combination of those two that are really the main forces and creative inspirations behind what I do musically.
And I'm going to get to the mentors in just a second, because you've really been blessed with the chance to not only be educated and mentored by the best, but to tour with the best. And those folks do not play with the average cat who is on a keyboard. We're talking about names like Herbie Hancock and Wayne Shorter. So if they like you, then you are exceptional. But I want to get back to the educational factor, because you went to Berkeley. You've not only had one but two scholarships in your life, and one of them was to Berkeley. You studied music synthesis. Could you describe that to me? I'm fascinated.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, electronic music is also a massive influence, and it's very much a part of what I do, and it's a part of my generation. You know, like I grew up listening to Bjork and Radiohead and Square Pusher, etc. So it's a sound, and it's just a sound and texture that has always very much inspired me, and that's something I'm drawn to. So when I went to Berkeley, I love working on my instrument. It's my first love. So I knew I was going to be practicing and absorbing as much music as possible. So I didn't feel necessarily the need to major in improvisation then, but I saw an opportunity in studying a major that was not available in many other schools, and that was music synthesis. So they showed us, you know, they had a whole bunch of equipment and gear with synthesizers and computer software and whatnot. And basically they taught us how to design sounds and program sounds and design soundscapes, which is something that, again, is very important to me, and it is part of the music that I create now. So that's what the major was about at Berkeley.
So do you think that enabled you then to feel confident, go forward, and compose music for your short films? Because there's been a few of them now.
Yeah, and they keep coming in, which is great. I love scoring for movies, and it's a lot of fun. So yes, and the funny thing though is that I yet have to score a movie where I really use more of that darker sound and texture that I think is more significant and prominent in my trio records. So far, I've mainly scored writing for orchestra, basically, and not so much designing sounds. But I would love to do that for a movie. So that's how it's gone down so far.
Yeah, there is a lot more to you than meets the eye. The first time that I heard you, you mentioned the word dark, and that's the first word that jumped out at me. But there's more behind that word. You are both passionate and cerebral. Sometimes that doesn't happen. Someone can be quite passionate about what they do, and there's no intellectual prowess involved in music. You have both, and there seems to be a reason why you've created the song the way that you have. Maybe I'm just overthinking it, and I don't want to do that, but for someone in their 30s, you seem to have lived a longer time than what your actual age would suggest.
Well, thank you for saying that. It's a great compliment. And but it's interesting. I think a life in general is a balancing act between thinking and feeling. Unfortunately, I think it'd be difficult, if not impossible, to survive for too long without thinking or planning at all. But at the same time, I'm not sure life is worth living without feeling and feeling good if possible, at least be honest about what we feel and embrace it. So yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because I remember Terence Blanchard telling us this when we were studying. He said, you know, jazz music is a constant balancing act between the mind and the heart, you know, because it's complex. It's very complex and evolved. It's a very complex and evolved art form. But at the same time, if one is not fully connected with the emotions that musical message is communicating, then you probably won't really reach the audience, you know?
Oh, for sure. And Terence, having been born in, let's just call it what it is, the birthplace, if you will,
right,
of jazz, where folks respond to music in an earthy way. There is no doubt that jazz, heavily involved in blues at one end of the spectrum, but you know, the interpretation of what it could be is so digestible from different cultures of the world. That's why I love to call the show Hybrid Jazz, because it's not one person's interpretation of what it could be. There are a myriad of those interpretations. And Terence is right, but it's so cool to get your perspective, because here you are, you come to the States, you go to Berkeley, then you go to the Monk Institute, and you're studying with Ron Carter, Russell Ferrante, Mulgrew Miller, Wynton Marsalis, and all of what you had learned when you were in France, and then here, it just poured into you in a different way. That's so exciting.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I think in art in general, I think it's really interesting to see how one piece of information will translate differently within each and every one of us. I mean, I think we perceive and absorb things slightly differently. That's what makes art beautiful and interesting. And we all have something, I believe we all have something unique and different to express, you know, and it's a great thing.
It's really wonderful, and I want to make sure I play something now. And we discussed what the choices were possibly going to be yesterday, and I pretty much stuck with that. I'm so intrigued because, once again, there's a dilemma in trying to choose three tracks for a particular show, and I don't want to play more because I honestly want people to buy your product, Roman.
Thank you.
So if I give them any more, they'll think, shit, I heard the whole thing, now I will have to buy it. But I was really interested in what someone had to say about Runner's High from The Calling. And that seems to be that the kind of synthesis piece where it's like a backdrop to me of New York, but you'll want to explain. Tell me.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, it's interesting you saying this because I wrote this piece when after I moved back to New York from Los Angeles because I was at the Thelonious Monk Institute of Jazz for a few years, and I moved back to New York. I had been in New York for only like a few months prior, after Boston and right before going to the Institute. So I was really eager to come back here, and I started giving a few shows with the trio, and I felt that New York is such a high energy place, and I really wanted a piece that had more of a bite to it. So as you know, as you said, we're definitely products of our environment, and so I wanted something that was, you know, playful but also like high energy and interesting to play as a trio. And the piece is, you know, as you know, a few little tricks in terms of time signatures and whatnot. So and it's usually a lot of fun to play live. So.
And it just encapsulates the kind of magic that you have, having seen some videos now and having been so completely delved into your work. You have a particular way of playing that is strong and light at the same time. You are one with that piano, and this is evident.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Roman Collin is our guest today on Hybrid Jazz. This is from The Calling, his latest project. It's called Runner's High. Oh, my. Roman Collin there and Runner's High from The Calling. Roman, I have to say that one of our chat room regulars, the wonderful Griselda, listening today from Texas, she said that she was reminded of Rhapsody in Blue when she was hearing that.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yes. It feels like an energy to her. That she understands the whole New York association. She was really enjoying that. So is Beach, and who's listening today from California. Thank you very much. It's so interesting that that's one of those songs that hit me from The Calling. It's not that you would hear a piece like that every day, and there's layers to it. But it sounds so familiar to me. It sounds like something that I have heard for a long time, and that's a good thing.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean it's great to hear actually, because I think it's. I mean, I try to stay true to what I hear and what I feel and hopefully take chances in terms of creating something that's personal. But at the same time, I think it's important to, as we said, to be able to reach your audience and touch people with something that still resonates and somehow feels familiar.
So in that case, what is it? What do you find these days that inspires you? Do you wake up a little excited because something has piqued your interest more than something else? Is it love? Is it nature? Is it the sound of the streets? What is it?
It's a bit of all of the above, actually. It's a funny question. It's an interesting question. It can be love. It can be the sounds of the city, for sure. I mean, I'm very inspired by New York in general.
I'll bet.
There's so much energy here.
Yes.
I love going out to shows, going out to exhibits, going out to museums. It's a very important source of inspiration and energy to me. But I love nature too, and I actually am fortunate enough to get to go to Hawaii once a year for a couple of weeks to go on tour with a collective trio that I'm part of called The North.
Fabulous! Tell me more about that.
Yeah.
You get to go once a year. Whoa!
Yeah, it all started with a good friend of mine, great drummer Abe Legrimus Jr., who went to Berkeley and who connected the dots between me, him, and Sean Conley, who is a young bass player who lives in New York. And both Abe and Sean are originally from Hawaii, but Abe lives in L.A. and Sean lives in New York now. And we all connected, and we decided to go to Hawaii for a week, 10 days, to do sort of a first run of gigs and see what would come out of it. And it went really great. And actually a few people from the island got really interested in the trio and sort of put together the opportunity for us to pass the island for 3 weeks. And it has to be released. So yeah.
You were fading out a little bit there. I was worried I was going to lose you.
Oh, okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Well,
okay,
that's really exciting. How can you say, because this would be the next question, how is the music scene in Hawaii?
It's really fun because there are a few good musicians, really good musicians who are from the mainland or the East Coast, and who decided one day that as much as they enjoyed the energy and inspiration that they got from a city like New York, they decided pretty much like some of those guys decided overnight that they were gonna take a flight to Hawaii and kind of move there, and so they're all like teaching and gigging and making it, creating a little jazz scene of their own over there, as well as enjoying obviously the incredible quality of life. So it's kind of an interesting thing.
Oh, look, I am a Hawaii groupie. I actually tune in on Sunday nights to see HGTV and Hawaiian real estate.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because...
Yeah. It's nice to watch. You know when you're one way in the snow and spring doesn't seem to be really making it... It's nice to watch.
Oh, exactly. And you know what? Your jaw just drops because... There are varying people from all walks of life who decide to move to Hawaii, and, you know, the kinds of homes that they're shown, some of them, even the smaller ones, they're close to the beach, so your mouth just waters.
I know.
And how is it when you were growing up, Roman, did you have a sort of pastoral setting? Was it a suburb type of feel in the south of France? And, gosh, it must have been a culture shock when you came to the States.
Yeah, actually, I grew up, like, on the Riviera, really close to the beach. So that's
why
that's why I feel so close to nature, and that's why I'm delighted to be able to go back to a warm place once in a while. But yeah, I mean, of course, it was a culture shock when I moved to the States. But that's what was so exciting about it, you know. There's so much to learn, and people are just sort of looking at life from a different lens, just because they are again a product of their culture and environment, and so it's fascinating, and it's also one of the great privileges in being a touring musician to be able to go to so many, keep going to so many different places and parts of the world that keep reminding me that, you know, life can be lived in so many different ways.
You know, now that you've mentioned it, I was trying to find the word to use to describe if someone has never heard you. Because of the circumstances that gave you the blueprint for your background, and that's a constant source of discussion these days with people in the way of, you know, what their home life was like, what their environment surroundings were like, what essentially their childhood was like, so that it gives you an indicator of what you're going to be as an adult. When you have had that kind of background where you can certainly make a startling contrast to where you are now. You are in the hustle and bustle, the continual 24/7 energy of New York, but yet you came from the Riviera. You were part and parcel of a place that was a constant source of peace. So when you have that contrast, your music is going to be reflective. And honestly, that's why I'm drawn to you now that I've heard you so much. You have this edge, this dark edge in your music, but it's never without serenity. It's never a place where anybody feels hopeless. It makes you feel hopeful.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah, I have heard that
really?
Before, and I'm glad that it's the case, because as you say, in spite of the hustle and all the challenges in life, there's great joy in novelty. There's great joy in change. There's great joy in being able to find a solution out of any potential problem, and overcoming difficulties and seeing the light, because the light permeates everything. I believe it's just a matter of being able to see it and feel it, but it's in everything, you know.
Do you find yourself as an artist and as a person, do you feel as though you have a kind of balance, or is it something that you strive to maintain each day? You're very conscious of it.
I think it's most certainly something that I strive to maintain. I mean, as a young musician and a young artist, you're trying to establish yourself, and it's just, you know, we have a lot of challenges, you know. It's, you know, it's just a lot of traveling and doing so many various projects at a time, and trying to stay afloat, it's a challenge, but it's also a path that I chose for myself, and that to me is the most, like, radically, fundamentally important thing. It's, I chose that path because it means so much to me and because I love what I do. So regardless of how much hustle there is to it, I'm still always very excited when I wake up in the morning to do what I do and go on to the next thing. That's always inspiring and exciting.
Because honestly, Roman, there are so many who reach out to you to ask if you can play with them. do you get dizzy sometimes because your workload is pretty enormous, or do you have periods where you can go, ah, here's a real breather?
it's phases, I never complain about work, and I can always have more, and I'm super happy when I'm being offered any kind of opportunity, you know. I think it's a blessing to be able to work as a young musician, and I'm also really grateful that I'm being presented with very inspiring and exciting opportunities as a sideman, as well as a solo artist. So, you know, the more the better. I really enjoy being busy, and I enjoy being immersing myself in sounds and creating sounds and music in general.
Well, who is it that you listen to these days? And we're going to talk about who was on the CD with you, the Calling, because we have to make mention of these stellar musicians.
Absolutely.
Who got you. I mean, they got you so much, it's evident. Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Oh no, you're excited. I want you to go ahead.
So on the record, we have Lucas Curtis on bass,
mm-hmm.
and Lucas is he's a really dear friend of mine. I've known Lucas and played with him for more than 10 years now, because we first met at Berkeley, and we've been playing and recording since. So I don't know. I think Lucas just plays the bass the way bass should be played. I can't really put it any other way, but he really makes everything feel good, and he makes the music always feel good or better, even. Regardless of the style and genre, I get to play with Lucas a lot in various settings, not just my own band, but also in other people's bands, and it's really mind-boggling to me, because he'll jump in pretty much any musical situation and make it sound and feel really great. So of course it's a no-brainer when I make a new record for me to call him, because I know Lucas' music, and he knows what I have in mind, and he'll just naturally gravitate towards the sounds that I feel my music needs. And Kendrick Scott is playing drums on the album.
Oh, yeah.
And I have, you know, so much respect for Kendrick. I mean, I think he's a really incredible musician and one of the greatest drummers in the world, I feel. He's so fluent at music, I'd say, in general. He's super sensitive. He's not just a timekeeper. He can really put so many colors and textures into the music, very effortlessly and naturally. My music is actually difficult for drummers in general, because it requires a real broad approach, from very rhythmic to more cinematic and colorful and sensitive, open, at the same time as really hitting on some of the tunes. So it's, I thought about the writing I was doing at the time and the project, and Kendrick felt like a really strong fit. And I have to say that he we rehearsed the music a little bit, and we had a few gigs, and he jumped right into it and made everything sound so good. And I was, you know, really, really thrilled, really excited, and inspired even more to make this album and try to push it to yet another level. So we got in the studio for a couple of days, and we tracked the trio, and that's how it went down.
And you and Kendrick seem to be kind of like minds, because I heard Kendrick say something recently in regard to his CD, which is out today, Conviction, Kendrick.Oracle,
right.
Conviction. So because of the association with you, we'll play something by Kendrick later on from Conviction. Because it's all about you today, Roman. But he said something that I've never heard a musician say, and I can feel that you understand that. He mentioned the word surrender. You have to surrender to what's at hand, and let the music take you over. You need to focus on being in the moment and totally paying respect to whatever it is that's being done. You can't let anything else enter your head. I'm paraphrasing, but
I can fully relate and support that idea. Of course, it's a great challenge, not just in music, but I think in life in general, that let go. And it's, to me, at least as a writer, as an improviser, it's very clear that the best music is created when it sort of writes itself, and it sounds like a cliche, but I just think that it's true. It's very destructive to come from a place of how we feel we should be sounding, how we feel we should be writing, because it sort of really interferes with maybe the gifts that we've been given.
Absolutely.
On a real raw level, you know, that can be expressed in a hopefully unfiltered and honest way. And that is, when that happens, I feel that this is what becomes universal and touches people, regardless of the genre, regardless of how complex or simple the music is. I'm a fan of music in general, not any specific style or genre.
Yeah.
I love listening to a Bob Dylan song, and I love listening to a Ravel concerto, and I love listening to a Wayne Shorter composition. And what I feel that all those types of music share in common is a clarity in the message. And I think that clarity comes from that surrendering and that let go, and really being honest with what it is that you know, we hear and feel. So more and more so, as both an improviser and as a composer, I try to be in tune with what I really hear at any given point in time. And if I don't hear much, then I try to be okay with it, and I just don't write much, I don't play much, and that's okay. Nothing has to be anything, I think, in art, you know, things that just are.
I get that. Yep, and you know, you mentioned it one way. Here's another way of saying it. When something writes itself, you can say that about a lot of things in life. Situations sometimes take care of themselves. Not to say that we aren't proactive about certain things that need to get done, but the expression that is used quite frequently these days, I use it, and it's never going to get old for me. Because I understand that when something happens organically, it means that one thing happens naturally after another. You can either work hard to create it or work smart to ensure that a project or an endeavor is going to get done in a way that makes sense with the universe.
Absolutely, and usually that will make sense to you, because sometimes we do things that we feel make sense to us, but it doesn't really. It makes sense to a certain vision that we feel should be important to us, but maybe it doesn't resonate that deeply within us at the end of the day. So I feel that, yeah, you're absolutely right to try to do something in a smart, honest way, because it's probably going to give the best results anyway.
Oh, yeah. If you are not being true to you, and there are other things that come into your head to distract you, the voice is saying, oh, you shouldn't do it this way, because you know what, Roman? It's not going to sell this way. Or somebody else puts an idea in your head, well, you know what, so-and-so is doing it that way. All of that, it has to get swept out, because people are hungry for authenticity. And the average listener gets shortchanged in the way of how smart he or she is. They are hungry for what Roman Collins sounds like.
Well, thank you. But yeah, I mean, you're totally right. I think, again, it's the same idea of knowing if something, intuitively we all know if something rings true, you know? We all know if something has that depth and that aura that only comes from, again, yeah, I guess authenticity and honesty.
Yep. And you mentioned about being enamored of different kinds of music and sounds and artists. So you know what I'm going to play now, right?
Oh, yeah. You're thinking about that John Mayer track.
Yes.
Yeah, I really like John Mayer. I think he's a great singer-songwriter. I really love his songwriting. I think his writing is very strong. And it's this tune, Stop This Train, from his Continuum record, which is a beautiful album. And it's kind of funny because it was literally 2 days before the recording session, I was listening to that song. And I thought, well, it's such a good song in terms of, I don't know, the structure, just the way, you know, beyond the lyrics even, just the way the harmony moves and the song is developed. And I always felt it was really touching and really strong in its concept. So I put together a quick chart, and Matt Pearson actually produced the album.
Yes.
And so it's the second day in the studio. We're sort of, you know, pretty much done, I think, with the recording session. And I mentioned to him, I said, you know, a couple of days ago, I was thinking about this song, and I was thinking it might be a good idea to just do a quick pass and see what comes out of it. And so he wasn't too familiar with the actual tune. So he checked it out, and then he said, you know, I think that's going to fit on the record. You should definitely do it. I was like, you sure? He said, yeah. So that's a good idea. So, and that made me happy because it's, I love all styles of music, and I'm very happy to be playing a pop song on my record, you know. So I just gave like a quick chart to the guys, and we just did like a one pass through, and it felt good.
Well, you know what? It's so exciting. Usually people get turned on when an instrumental song is made into a vocal. I get completely excited when a vocal song is turned into a truly worthy instrumental, just the opposite. And, you know, when something can make you emotional because you already know the words in your head, but then you hear it in a whole different way and artists are playing with love, it's a whole new level of the song. And the song maybe had been good beforehand, now it becomes great. And you did a great job.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Roman Collin is our guest today on Hybrid Jazz. From The Calling, this is Stop This Train. Enjoy. Thank you. Roman, that is gorgeous. Oh, my God.
Thank you. Thank you, Trish.
My goodness. See, you know what? I don't understand how people do it when they travel the world. And, you know, maybe they're fortunate enough to have had some songs that people know and love. But if you're not playing with love, and maybe it's just by rote when you tour or play out, how sad is that? Because obviously you were so enamored playing that song.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is why we do what we do as musicians, really. It's just to always try to reunite with that prime feeling of joy and peace and excitement when we first picked our instrument and heard sounds coming out of the instrument and put sounds together that felt really sort of exciting and inspiring to us. You know, I think it's the idea is to try to stay with that feeling and true to that feeling as much as we can, even as professional musicians, when, you know, we start to get the, you know, the pressures of, you know, a lot of work and traveling and all this, but it's important to keep that, that headspace, I think.
It's really funny. This is just one of those things I've noticed through the years because I've been doing radio. This kills me. You were born in 1979, right?
Yes.
I've been doing radio since 1976.
You have a lot to teach me.
Oh, my God. Well, that just kills me because, you know, I am old enough to be your mom. And in varying types of music, I've been involved in country music for a long time, actually, in forays into pop and rock. And certainly jazz is the penultimate. But it always seems to me, and maybe you can say yay or nay or be completely confused about the statement, but honest to goodness, whenever I have seen an artist, whether it's a male composer or a female composer, if they have written a song with someone's name in it, whether it's a mom, girlfriend, lover, friend, whatever the case is, there's always an extra amount of love involved. I can hear the love through the vinyl.
it's true. It is true.
You think so?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, there's more homework for you to do then, because and that's when I heard Stop This Train, it almost gave me that impression. There was an extra measure of love in the way you were playing, and you can almost see someone smiling as your fingers touching the keyboard, and what it must have been like for John Mayer to have written the song, what inspirations were there. When people are drawn in to trying to figure out your headspace and heart space when you write something, how exciting is that for you, Roman?
Again, I feel that it's, first of all, I'm always very grateful if people take the energy to listen to what I do. I never take it for granted, and I'm really very happy if I can touch somebody. This is why we do what we do, you know, so we can share it. Hopefully we can inspire ourselves creating what we create, but also we can share it with the world. It's an incredible gift and a unique kind of opportunity to be able to share it with people who can be complete strangers, but yet you're able to communicate a certain type of emotion openly to a crowd of strangers, you know, and if somebody takes the time and the emotional commitment and energy to listen to my music and is receptive to it and is moved by it, then to me it's the greatest gift and it's the greatest reward. It really is.
You are so, we've said this word a few times, you are so blessed to be able to have this, and I mentioned this phrase to you in conversation before the show started, this particular catbird seat. You really do have it. You have generated a lot of respect, a lot of buzz. People are watching you. I don't know
Thank
whether
you.
You feel like this, but you remind me of someone who is a bit of a specimen under glass.
Well.
But that's good. Okay.
Yeah, it is good, and I'm excited to keep doing what I do, and hopefully keep making inspiring people when they hear what I do. I'm actually writing for our next record now.
Oh, good.
I'm really excited. Yeah, I'm really excited with how it's coming along. So hopefully I'll be able to get that going pretty soon too.
Well, that's a concrete plan. You're writing music for your new project. So what would you like to see happen more for you in 2013 into 2014? Is there something that you have in the way of a dream to work with somebody or whatever?
It's funny. I've always wanted to collaborate with Bill Frisell. He's one of my very favorite artists.
Ooh.
He's such an inspiration to me. I would love someday to be able to play with Bill. Otherwise, more practically, I've been, fortunate enough to play quite a bit with my trio when the record came out, and, I did some stuff in Japan and the West Coast, East Coast, and Europe for about 3 weeks. So I really want to keep that going and tour as much as possible with my own music. So that's one thing for sure. Otherwise, I'm blessed to be a part of various projects that are very, very exciting. Working with Tim Green has been a great, great pleasure, of course, because I play with Tim so much, and we're at the Monk Institute together for 2 years, and I'm really thrilled that we keep playing, and I look forward to more in the future. And his record, Songs from the Season, came out about a month ago. It's an amazing record, so I think people should definitely check it out. I've been working with bassist Tony Gray. He just made a new record that's not out yet. I'm not sure how much I should say about it, but it's really exciting, and he's got a great lineup, and it's featuring guests like Mike Stern and John McLaughlin, and that's another project that's really fun, and hopefully we'll tour with that too. And more film scoring always. I'm really, this is something that I want to keep doing, because it's very exciting and inspiring, because when I have to write for a movie, then I start checking out a lot more film scores from composers whom I really love and respect, and it gives me a different perspective on music making and composition in general. So that's great. That's great food for me when I'm trying to write for my band. It's all kind of tied in together.
Well, I'm just glad for all of what you bring to the table. I heard one of the engineers at the recording session for Kendrick Scott, when he was doing Conviction, he was talking about the musicians in the room, but you're a part of that, you and Tim Green. This young blood in the genre of jazz and other music that sort of hybrids itself with jazz, it just makes some of us who have been around for a longer time feel so hopeful about the quality and the artistry and the creativity of the future of music. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Trish. I appreciate that.
You are so welcome, and I will see you down the road, hopefully in New York when you play. I can't wait to have that happen. Woohoo!
Absolutely, yeah. I hope to get to meet you in New York. That'd be great.
That would be great, and of course we're going to play a third track, and of course we have to do the title track. Tell us about this before we end this for the hour, Roman, about the inspiration for the calling.
Well, The Calling is that it was actually, it was a really important piece for me, because I think it's the first one that I wrote that I felt set the tone for the majority of the record, in the sense that it's very melodic. There's a theme that keeps coming back. So it's very melody-based, but at the same time, it was open enough for me to be able to explore new possibilities in terms of post-production after tracking the trail. So I really got to look into other possibilities. I added I layered lots of things that people probably feel more than they hear, because I didn't want to distract the listener from the actual trio, but I still wanted to enhance the overall trio sound with a soundscape that's basically made of layered vocals, sound designed, textures on synthesizers. There's some cello. There's some electric guitar played by John Shannon, who is a great inspiration to me. He's an incredible singer-songwriter and guitar player. So I felt that, when I first wrote this piece, I felt that it was sort of a pivotal thing for me, because I realized that I was able, through this melody and this structure of the tune, I was going to be able to sort of shift gears a little bit and create an overall sound and texture for the piece that, to me at least, was fairly new. So that's what The Calling is about.
Mm. Well, it just seems totally appropriate for you to be able to call your album The Calling, because there's definitely a calling on you. You are for sure doing what you're supposed to do in this life, and you are going to be doing a lot of healing and blessing along the way. So congratulations to you.
Thanks very much, Trish, and thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely, and our paths will cross again, I'm sure.
They sure will.
All right, Roman, thank you.
Okay, I'll take these invites.
Bye-bye. Roman Cullen, so wonderful to have him on the show and that he could spend an hour with us. Just immerse yourself in this 7.5-minute song. It's just so beautiful. From The Calling, this is the title track on Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
life was low. You had nowhere to go. People turned their backs on you, and everybody said that you were through. I took you in, I made you strong again, put you back together out of all the dreams you left along the way. You left me shining. Now you're doing well. From stories I hear tell,
Mercy. Woo! I promised you a show that was going to sort of encapsulate spring, and there might be a little deviation, a little variation on a theme during Hybrid Jazz today, but got to play some songs. Sometimes when you're programming a show like this, it has, honest to gosh, happened that the day of, I go, wait a minute, no, I got to play this. So we had to play something from Roman Cullen. Thank you, Roman, so much. You are such a doll, so handsome, too. Oh, Lord, can I just say that? Roman Cullen spent an hour with us. It was wonderful. His album, The Calling, is delicious and beyond. We played the title track, had to go right into a classic, and that was Dexter Gordon. Then I had to go right into Layla Hathaway with Joe Sample. So sometimes when you think of spring music, you think, ooh, up-tempo, positive. And you could take that song either way, because some people have actually put spiritual connotations. At first glance, that song, When Your Life Was Low, could be about a relationship where one clearly was maybe more in love with the other. But I have heard people say, including my wonderful program director boss that I had at one time, Lori Lewis, take it in a context of God with an errant child. That puts a whole other spin on it, doesn't it? My God. Whoa, love that song. 1999. From the song Lives On, Layla and Joe getting together with Kirk Whalum and Lenny Castro in the background. Come on now. How wrong can you go? And Layla does a version of Fever on the album. Just magical stuff. Layla is going to be with Foreplay at Burke's Jazz in the next several days. So if you didn't get your tickets, you better go get them. Because, man, they got a lineup and a half this year. I think, is it BurkesJazzFestival.com, or it could be BurkesJazz.com. You'll find it. Just do a Google search. Dexter Gordon, whew, from Go, 1962. Where Are You? That was the name of the song. Written, actually, for a 1937 film called Top of the Town. And this was Dexter's 10th studio album on Blue Note, re-released in 1999 as part of the RVG series, which stands for Rudy Von Gelder, who did masterful work. And in Rudy's footsteps, Michael Cascuna, who used to be a disc jockey on WMMR in Philadelphia, but has since found fame, fortune, and a lot of respect as someone who finds these tracks and retools them, does a masterful job on mastering, and then re-releases them. So, Michael, thank you for that. Man, anything we can do with prettying up these chestnuts, the legendary stuff that we have come to know and love, and not taking away from the authenticity of the original, but making sure that the sound that you hear is stellar. And Dexter Gordon, tenor sax, Sonny Clark on piano, Butch Warren on bass, Billy Higgins on drums. That song was just, well, allmusic.com gave it a 5-star rating. And so many others have said you need to have this Go album in your collection. You do. And Roman Cullen to start things off. It's always so nice to be able to play one of these new and amazing cats next to someone that we have known about for years, someone who paved the way. Love to do that. Speaking of new cats and new kitties, there is this young gal. Her birthday is today. She is 34 years old today, about the same age, yeah, as Roman Cullen, Hiromi. What a keyboardist this young woman is, a child prodigy. I could spend a day and a half telling you about the background of this young woman who has commanded so much respect because she's so disciplined. From Japan and at Jump, she was focused and disciplined, and she has been able to create this music that is amazing. Brand new album called Move. My friend Renee said something on a post in the past couple of days on Facebook that made me think of her. One of the tracks on the Move album by Hiromi and Company, including Anthony Jackson and Simon Phillips, amazing artists in their own right. This particular track is called Sweet Escapism Fantasy. And it actually sounds like a little fantasy. So whatever yours is, say a little happy birthday wish to Hiromi and make sure you dwell on your fantasy. Speak it out, if you will, so that it comes true. Make it a good one. Hybrid Jazz, you will like this track a lot.
Thank you.
Man, what memories. Woo! Joe Jackson, stepping out from 1982. This is so cool. Love doing the show because in a space of, what, 20, 30 minutes, we heard from 1962, 1972, and 1982, and some new stuff. I love it. Oh, my goodness. That from Night and Day, that was the fifth album by Joe Jackson, and the title of the album was inspired by Cole Porter. Joe just revered him and actually revered Duke Ellington. His last album, just out in 2012, called The Duke. It was a tribute to Duke Ellington and featured, you'll love this, Regina Carter, Christian McBride, and Iggy Pop, among others. Yeah, that's hybrid. Yeah. And Joe Jackson, if you ever saw the video, man, some of the shots, because there's a few of Steppin' Out, but all of them I've seen look pretty ancient. And I guess when you think about it, 1982 is going back a while, but man, it just seems like yesterday to some of us. Never mind. In any case, Kurt Elling did the song too in 2011? Yeah, 2011. Steppin' Out, Joe Jackson. His hair's graying. What hair he has left, anyway. Just an interesting cat. And did some gigs with Regina Carter. He apparently is not touring now, but I would just love to spend some time with him. He has certainly done his own thing through the years. Another one of those guys who really doesn't care what labels you attach to him because he doesn't have any particular loyalty to a genre, just does what he wants to do, and everything he does is with passion. Chick Corea, speaking of passionate, Return to Forever. Man, that was good stuff. Spain, from Light as a Feather, back in 1972. Considered, actually, to be one of the jazz albums of all time. And Chick, I can't believe it. Seriously, there are some people whose websites you can go to, and thank God that some of these artists keep up their websites. If you go to Chick Corea's page, you will see tour dates that will blow your mind. He is touring with Bela Fleck. He is doing some dates with Gary Burton. He is doing a lot of dates with Stanley Clarke, who joined him on acoustic bass on that particular project back in the 70s. And then Chick's got this new assembly called The Vigil. And I didn't even check to see how far along the schedule is, but he must be doing a lot of vitamins. And his wife must be being real good to him, and they apparently have an extraordinary relationship because he is gone most of the time. Amazing. You will find Spain, a version of that Chick did with Hiromi as well. And I guess I just got inspired with all the keyboard work because of Roman Cullen, who was our guest, but going back to Chick for a second here, Joe Farrell is on the CD too. He barely gets mentioned. He played tenor sax and flute on that Return to Forever masterpiece. Stanley, of course, on acoustic bass, and Flora Purim and Ayerto Moreira as well. I just wanted to practice saying that for you. Just folks that were are still part of the George Duke world, and actually it's not too far removed. We talked earlier about jazz being this big family, and Stanley and George are so close, and George Duke keeps in touch with Flora and Ayerto, and Chick Corea used that Brazilian influence back in the early days, and now he's just all over the map as far as what he brings to the jazz, etc. world. Again, a Grammy winner from 2012, and you're going to be hearing another one in moments. And you heard this track when Greg Karukas was on the show a few weeks ago, and we're going to get back to it because this gentleman is blood-curdling as far as talent is concerned. Speaking of which, Hiromi, Sweet Escapism, Fantasy, from the new CD called Move. You have to understand the length and breadth of the talent of this woman. Happy birthday to Hiromi today. Child prodigy, learned very early on that in her small town in Japan, there was no one that she felt comfortable playing with because she was so advanced at an early age. She would use her left hand to make it some semblance of bass and drum, and she incorporated both hands, of course, in playing the piano, but she was very clear. She wanted this trio effect in her mind. So she was still playing. She went to law school. She found jingle work with Nissan after law school, still on fire for piano, got a scholarship, went to Berkeley, found her way in jazz circles in the United States. People were just blown to smithereens when they heard her because this is a new kind of fusion that they're hearing. The classically trained, the love of jazz, the love of rock. She chafes at the notion of being put into a box. She has played various jazz festivals with a myriad of people that are part of A-lists all over the world. Got together Anthony Jackson, and I got to tell you about him. If you are familiar with the bass intro to the OJs, For the Love of Money, yeah, that was Anthony Jackson, who has been in circles for years in R&B and jazz. And when he found Hiromi, he thought he had struck gold because he couldn't believe how disciplined she was. And then there's Simon Phillips on drums, who has played with The Who and Toto and Philippe Sace and a whole bunch more, blown away again. Seasoned veterans who found this young woman in their midst, who is articulate and a genius and brings a new blood into the realm of instrumental music. And, man, it just must be the day for playing this kind of young, infused fire into what could be the future of jazz. It's very, very exciting. And we're going to play another one of those cats coming up soon. But right now, this is the man who won a Grammy for Best New Age Album with the help of his good friend and collaborator, Greg Karukas. You have heard the song before, but let us take your breath away in the new season of spring, whether we have snow on the ground still or not. This is the magic of Omar Akram, Open Skies from Echoes of Love on Hybrid Jazz. Thank you.
wondering what this world's about. I know a place that has the answer. It's a place where no one dies. It's a land where no one cries. And good vibrations always greet you.
Thank you.
No idea I was going to get that emotional listening to that song. 12 minutes and 24 seconds of sheer bliss. I'm telling you, in the 70s, when we heard that song, we thought it was a dream to actually get together a lady who really hasn't had a long career. And actually, I saw online in the past several days questions. Is Esther Satterfield still alive? Is she still with us? The last time I checked, she was living in Maryland, and she is married and had several children, and she just retired from the scene. But seriously, if she had never done anything else in her life, and she did a few more things, but that right there, that would have been enough. The Land of Make-Believe with Chuck Mangione and Gat Mangione and the Hamilton, Ontario Philharmonic Orchestra. Jeez, just incredible. That lyric is so powerful. Back in 73, it meant something, but now, 2013, it means even more. Oh, my gosh, just a breathtaking voice. Full of longing and a childlike belief in what the world could be and dreaming of the land of make-believe. Oh, just amazing stuff. Have to tell you this. I laughed so hard last night. Mike and Molly usually makes me laugh. But last night, Mike had a particular ringtone on his phone. And his partner said, why don't you get something softer instead of blaring people out? Why don't you get something like Chuck Mangione? Something nice. So Mike doesn't say too much, and he has to fly to Florida to get Molly and her sister because his poor wife got acute sunburn, and Mike drives both sister and Molly back. And at the end of the show... Everybody's in a good headspace except for the sister who's kind of hungover. So Molly's happy because she has her husband. Mike is driving. He got a couple of days off from work. And what does he turn on? He must have made a tape, and there was Chuck Mangione feels so good. So they're both bopping along to Chuck as they're driving back home. It was really cool. Man! Never forget meeting Chuck Mangione a few years ago. He was actually playing in Little Italy in Baltimore. It was really a splendid affair. God bless him. He's gone through some stuff in his time, and whew, haven't we all, but some more than others, right? Greg Manning, that was the second song in our set, Yeke Yeke Yo from The Calling. That's my favorite song from that 2010 album. Greg, born in Nigeria, raised in Switzerland, U.S. resident, doing so well, doing his thing. Oh, my goodness. And I just checked and found out that I believe he's going to be at Spagatini's in Seal Beach with Phil Denny in April. You might want to check on that beach. Yeah. Greg's been making the rounds and can't keep up. He's another one I can't keep up with. I can't go to everybody's page and find out what they're doing, but it's good to know that body of work, especially for my friend Kathy in Florida, who's listening today, that was for you, sweetie. Thank you so much for hanging in there with us today. That was a sweet taste of all of what Greg can do on that keyboard. Composer, producer, arranger, really did a beautiful job. Omar Akram. And I get so amused because I don't know why it's so irritating to hear Omar described as an Afghan American. There's got to be a better way. Do we have to describe him at all? It's good to know that he's coming from an Afghani point of view, and actually he comes from a lot of point of views. He is the son of a UN diplomat, so he was born in New York. He lived in France and Cuba, Afghanistan, and the Czech Republic. So he's got a lot of different kinds of visions and songs in his head. You heard Open Skies from Echoes of Love, and Greg Karukas is particularly proud of the association he has with Omar. Greg picked up that Grammy as well as Omar did in this last award ceremony, and if I had been paying attention, I would have seen the feed before the show, because now you see a lot of those presenters and a lot of entertainment. And folks who win the awards come up and say something about how pleased they are. So didn't see that, but when you hear this album, you will fully understand why this was named Best New Age Album. He's amazing. Another pianist and composer, and now based in L.A. And he's going to be playing, by the way, in April at the House of Blues. If you get a chance to see him, you will see greatness. There is another great one I'm about to play, and this is a Baltimore-based hometown hero. You heard him on Valentine's Day here on Hybrid Jazz. We had a great show that day. We knew to expect this gentleman, but we weren't sure about Kevin Whalen. And Kevin showed up in the second hour. It was a lot of fun. By the way, his brother Kirk was also on the calling, as well as Keb Moe and Mindy Hebert on Greg Manning's CD, one of the tracks we heard, just a cool track. And this particular friend is full of great tracks. You heard Roman Collin speak of him so highly, and Roman is on this track. And it's a little bit like hallowed ground to step in to telling you about this song, because it is from Tim Green's album called Songs from This Season. The song refers to a place that was spoken of in the Gospel of John and I think a couple of other places, but there was a particular pool. The pool was called the Pool of Siloam, and there was an instance where Jesus, he spit on the ground, and he got his saliva, and he formed a little ball with mud. He put it on the eyes of a blind man, and he said, "Now go and wash in the pool of Siloam." And Tim thought it would be a pretty interesting idea to focus on that so that he could showcase the idea of the blind being able to see and changes that you could make within yourself to come to a knowledge of what God has for you. Woo! I'm telling you, this is so beautiful, and I'll tell you the personnel after they have finished the song, but again, from one of the most profoundly fabulous albums from the past several months, Tim Green on saxophone, Siloam on Hyper Jazz. Thank you. This is Hybrid Jazz from Trish Hennessy.
Love and happiness. Yeah. Something that can make you do wrong, make you do right. Yeah. Love. Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone, 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah, talking about how she can make it right. Yeah, yeah. Happiness is when you really feel good. Somebody, there's nothing wrong being in love with someone, yeah. Oh, baby, love and happiness, love and happiness.
Good golly, I could do another 5 minutes of that song. Whew! Love and Happiness, Reverend Al Green right there. And, man, that was an interesting set. We went from one end of the spectrum to the other. Well, Reverend Al sort of tied it all in. Got a little earthy right there with Love and Happiness from Still in Love with You, 1972. Al is going to be 67 on April 13th, just so you know, so you can get your cards and letters together for him. AlGreenMusic.com is where to go to keep up a little bit with Al. Al likes to keep a low profile and do his thing when he wants to do it. So it's hard to say what his next endeavor is going to be, but the website is pretty cool. Just so you know, nobody ever talks about this, but that was Charles Hodges on organ. Man, do I love to hear the sound of that thing during that song. And his brother, Mabon Hodges, a.k.a. Teeny. He was the co-writer of the song along with Al Green. And Teeny's playing guitar on that. Yes. Something about Memphis. When you get a sound that captures the essence of Memphis, Tennessee, Lord have mercy. That was the fifth studio album that was, Still in Love with You. Sandra and Charles Chalmers on background vocals. Nobody ever talks about that, too. And any time I ever hear a female again doing background vocals and she is not given credit, I'm going to come out of my shell and somebody's going to get hurt. Sometimes you see absolutely no credits as to who is singing background, and that is primo, because sometimes these vocals can get overwhelming and you wish that they would be a little bit more in the background. But sometimes the vocalization in a track means everything. So, good work, Sandra and Charles. You hit it right there. Love and Happiness. Arlington Jones. Oh, such a nice deal to be able to play Arlington Jones right there. Mentor, educator, piano man, Chicago-born, Dallas. Living in Dallas right now and really doing some wonderful things because he lives, done in an up-tempo, loving way by Arlington, who's all about making sure that folks understand the power of their spirituality and tries to do in his youthful way. I just love him. Ways to get kids interested in family life and making sure that when he gets an educational forum together, a workshop, or doing his mentoring, he does this all the time. He always stresses the positivity of listening to God and making sure you follow in that direction. I love him. With Wayman Tisdale from 2000 to 2009, and I know that to this day Arlington misses him so much. And music director for Jonathan Butler for a few years, and now has his own jazz video show, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah! ArlingtonJones.com. I love that name anyway. Just did a really nice job on Because He Lives. Tim Green, Siloam. I don't know how you pronounce it. I should, because I am a student of the New Testament. That song is so powerful from Songs from This Season, brand new from Tim Green, who is on alto sax there. Roman Cullen, our guest from earlier today, is on piano on that track. Gilad Hexelman on guitar, a wonder on that guitar. Obed Calvert on drums. Josh Ginsberg on acoustic bass. I'm telling you, he's got the A-team on this album right here. Can't say enough about Tim Green. And in his words, and I'm going to get to one of these other young cats in mere seconds, in his words about this song, keeping with the biblical theme, quite a few of these songs do, Siloam is the pool in Jerusalem where Jesus told the blind man to wash his eyes. And at that point, the man was healed and made to see again. After he received his miracle, Jesus told him that his mission in life was to be a witness of and to the power of God. This story of life's definition and purpose is the inspiration behind this tune. So there you go. And with that, I give you something brand new as of today. Our guest, one of our guests on Thursday, this gentleman is going to kick off the show, Todd Marcus, profoundly talented on bass clarinet, is going to be in the third hour of the show on Thursday. This man, Kendrick Scott, will kick it off in 2 days. I am just so proud that he agreed to do the show because everybody wants a piece of Kendrick Scott's time. When you hear him, you'll know why. He is a monumental drummer, one of the new blood that is the future of jazz. And you will hear why now on Conviction, the name of the CD. There is a very intense reason why he named it so. This particular track is called Pendulum on Hybrid Jazz.
Lord, make me an instrument of thy peace. Where there is hatred, let us sow love. Where there is doubt, let us sow faith. Where there is despair, let us sow hope. Where there is sadness, let us sow joy. And where there is darkness, let us sow light. Divine Master, grant that we may not so much seek to be consoled, but yet to console others. Grant that we may not so much seek to be understood, but yet to understand others. Grant that we may not so much seek to be loved, but yet to love others, because it's in giving that we receive. It's in dying to ourselves that we are born again. Thank you.
Pleasure to play Steve Oliver. I love that song, Fearless, from his Global Kiss album, the one before World Citizen. Steve Oliver Music has more information. Time is getting to be of the essence. Kendrick Scott, Oracle. Conviction is out today. You heard Pendulum. You'll hear three songs on Thursday. Kendrick Scott joins us at the top of the 1 o'clock Eastern Time hour on Thursday. Can't wait for that. Derek Hodge, Alan Hampton, Joe Sanders, Taylor Eichsty all had a part in making this extraordinary music. Todd Marcus joins us at the 3 o'clock hour on Thursday. Thank you all so much for joining us. Roman Cullen, I love you. You are a blessing to have in our show today. And thanks to everybody who supports and listens to Hybrid Jazz. God bless. We'll see you on Thursday. Have a good night.